This is Stinky, and you're listening to 3CR's 24 Hours of Female Voices on International Women's Day 2019.
First thing this morning, I thought we might jump straight into this interview with Alison Gibbons. So Alison has over 20 years experience in the not-for-profit and government sector with qualifications in law, management and science. She was responsible for Amnesty's campaigning, organising and activism teams, and she's currently the Deputy National Director of Amnesty Australia. So I chatted with her last week about the abuse of young people in Banksy Hill Detention Centre. So just a heads up for listeners, this is a bit of an intense interview. Feel free to tune out and come back in 15 minutes or so, but it is a really great discussion.
Thanks so much for speaking with me today, Alison. I was wondering, to begin, could you give us a bit of background on what's been going on at the Banksy Hill Detention Centre and what led to the initial claims of abuse of young people who are locked up in that centre?
Sure. Well, as you probably know, in Australia at the moment, young people under the age of 18 who have Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander background are 25 times more likely to be in the justice system than non-Indigenous young people, which is a shocking statistic, and the situation in Western Australia is particularly bad. It's the worst in the country. Western Australia has a large detention centre where they hold all the children between the ages of 10 and 18 in the state who are in detention, including boys and girls, in one centre. So there's up to 150 kids, or around average on 150 kids locked up in Banksy Hill at any given time. And the last year we have figures for, which was 2016-17, 856 kids went through Banksy Hill during that year. So it's quite a large centre. It's had a lot of problems over the years. There's been a series of reports produced by the Independent Inspector of Prisons in Western Australia. In fact, 7 reports over 6 years. Talking about issues with the detention centre, and the most recent one came out in August. And that report identified some really awful problems that had happened in the centre during 2017, including holding some young people in solitary confinement for 10 days. So Amnesty International has been calling attention to these issues. We've been working for some time to reduce the overrepresentation of Indigenous young people in detention, and we're extremely keen for the West Australian government to implement international standards and to make sure that Banksy Hill is not a place where solitary confinement of children is permitted into the future.
Yeah, I'm sure listeners will be horrified to hear that that's happening, you know, today in 2018 to kids so young. And you mentioned that there was the most recent report came out in August. What were the findings of that report?
So that report that report was based on some allegations that were brought to the attention of the minister by Amnesty. Some families and children in the centre came to us talking about conditions in the centre which were truly shocking and we felt were likely to be in breach of international standards. So we brought those to the attention of the minister, and as I said, this independent inspector produced a report. And basically, the report had 5 recommendations which we strongly agree with. In summary, basically, they're about making sure that when there are allegations of mistreatment, they're addressed, making sure that there is record-keeping, because one of the most shocking aspects of the report is even the independent inspector was not able to find out what had happened to those children, because CCTV footage was wiped, records were not kept, and the information is just not there to explain how these children were treated in the centre. But the one that we welcome the most strongly is a recommendation that Western Australia should update its legislation to be in line with international standards, including ruling out the use of solitary confinement for children.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to go back to what you said about all the records being wiped or not accessible, I remember when I first heard that, I was like, how is that even possible? Can you speak a bit to that? Like, is that a common, I guess, barrier that you come up against when trying to investigate allegations of abuse like this?
Yes, it has been historically been quite common. You'd be aware that there have been some major scandals in Don Dale in the Northern Territory, in Victoria, in ACT, where footage has emerged or other records have emerged of the treatment of children in detention centres. And generally it's taken the release of that kind of footage for the claims of children to be believed. Those records are really important, and the availability of those records to independent inspectors and other parties is critical. And Western Australia has a practice of wiping the CCTV footage after 28 days. So one of the recommendations of the inspector is that footage should be kept for a year, for at least a year. That has been the problem. These are children who, you know, have got in trouble, they've had difficult lives, they have difficult behaviours, and they make these allegations. And it's very easy for people to dismiss them and write them off when there isn't accountability for the institutions. So Amnesty is proud to be part of shining a light on what is happening in these institutions and listening to those young people and amplifying their voices.
Yeah, and I think that's such an important point that, you know, even long before this report and before footage or other records were released, you know, young people were talking about this and writing to their parents and other people to say, you know, to let them know what was going on. But as you say, that's so often dismissed by institutions and by people in power, and it's so vital to be listening to young people and elevating their experiences and voices.
Yes. Banksia has a terrible history, which is documented, of abusing children. And once again, we have evidence of these kind of abuses happening on occasion throughout Australia. So Western Australia is not unique, but Western Australia has a particularly bad record. So some of the earlier inspectors' reports found things like that staff did almost 13,000 strip searches over 2 years, over 2015-16, on children as young as 10 years old.
Oh my
and
gosh.
In that they found only, and those 13,000 strip searches found only 10 items of contraband. So that is 13,000 times that children were forced to, you know, be strip searched, which is just... These are children who are going to grow up and go into society and who we should be supporting to become more functional members, to address their previous trauma, to improve their behaviour. And it's hard to imagine that that kind of treatment is doing anything except creating future problems.
Yeah, that's... I mean, I'm almost speechless. I didn't... Yeah, that's such... You know, 13,000 times of, you know, inflicting... essentially sexual, physical and emotional violence on these kids, and as you say, re-traumatizing them, is it's shocking beyond words. And I want to go back to a point that you just made then about, you know, how widespread these issues are, but how recently a lot of attention has been on Don Dale, specifically in the Northern Territory, with the Royal Commission that was underway there. But And a lot of, you know, media attention and public discourse has almost focused on Don Dale as a site of exception. But it seems to me that what you're saying is that actually these issues are incredibly rife and widespread in youth prisons across the country.
Look, we have had complaints from pretty much every facility, and over the last couple of years every state has had a scandal of some kind. To put a positive aspect to it, what's happened there arising from the Northern Territory Royal Commission is actually really promising. In May of this year, the Northern Territory passed legislation that reduces the use of isolation or separation of children, so that it makes it very, very difficult or impossible for children to be kept in solitary confinement. And we think that that legislation is a model that other states, including Western Australia, should be looking at. So this is based on, you know, long-standing expert opinion. So back in 2017, the Australian Children's Commissioners and Guardian all got together and issued a joint statement saying that the use of isolation on a child or young person should be prohibited except when absolutely necessary and under a range of strict conditions and reporting and approvals. And we strongly agree with that, and we think that legislation to put those standards in place is absolutely critical at the moment. Instead of the situation we saw in Banksia last year, where children were held for 10 days in cells where they were out of their cells for less than 2 hours a day. So that's solitary confinement by international standards.
Yeah, wow.
So, yes.
I was going to say,
it can be addressed.
Yeah, of course, there are so many things that can be done. But just on that note, I wanted to ask, how effective do you think international standards are as an accountability mechanism?
Yeah, well, obviously international standards don't have the force of law in Australia, but they do have a way of talking about what a civilised society would expect. And Australia is a rich, stable, democratic nation, and there is no reason why we shouldn't aspire to meet the minimum standards set internationally. And I mean, these standards are minimums, they're not maximums. And we're, at the moment, Western Australia is a long way away from that standard. I mean, so part of that's a great role that international standards play, that they remind us what the world expects of us. And it's particularly important in moments when politicians and the media are caught up in frenzies about particular crimes or, you know, moral panic, to be able to take a step back and say, hang on a minute, there's nothing special here. There's no reason why Western Australia should have a lower rate of a lower standard of human rights than the rest of the world. And here is the standard that we can hold ourselves against.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. But as you say as well, you know, they're unable to be mandated or enforced. And as we see on, for example, Nauru, you know, and the abuses the Australian government allegedly commits there against asylum seekers and refugees, international standards don't always, aren't always listened to, I guess, by the people that are in power.
No, but I guess Amnesty stands for bringing together the voices of people who believe that human rights are vitally important and that Australia should be meeting those standards. And we just keep bringing those up to decision makers over and over again, whether they want to hear it or not. So, you know, over time, there's evidence that putting together the voices of people who care about these issues does make a difference, and that's really what Amnesty's model is based on.
Yeah, and we started this interview by you were talking about the disproportionate impact of Banksia Hill and other youth prisons on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children, young people and families. I was wondering if you could maybe speak to that a bit more and whether you see, I guess, youth prisons generally and the impacts they have as fitting within, you know, one of the, a legacy of colonisation and, in this country.
Yeah. Well, there's no question that the disproportionate impact of all aspects of the justice system on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people really rises to a level where you can talk about systemic discrimination. There, you know, for instance, in Banksia, we don't have recent figures, but in 2015, because they stopped reporting stats in 2015, sorry, but prior to that, there was up to around 75% of the children in Banksia had Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander heritage, just as an example. You're probably aware that in the Northern Territory at the moment, 100% of the children in detention are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children. So when you get a system that is that out of whack, you really need to ask yourself what is underpinning that and how to address those discriminations and that historic disadvantage. So Amnesty really, one of the things that we strongly advocate is community-led solutions. So obviously we don't think that children aged 10 to 14 should be in jail at all. We have a very strong demand at the moment for the age of criminal responsibility to be raised to 14. At the moment, children as young as 10 can, and in every state are, found guilty of being responsible for criminal behaviours and are put into detention. We think that in a country like Australia, that's unacceptable. And so we're pushing for the age of criminal responsibility to be raised, to recognise that children are not making those criminal decisions in the same way as adults. And they need intervention to manage their behaviour, to address their needs, to manage their health issues in many cases, and they don't need to be put into the justice system. So that's our primary call to address at the moment, to address children going into the justice system, but it recognises that there is like a long pipeline that leads those children in. So we're very interested in diversion and early intervention programs, and there's strong evidence that community-led programs, so led by Aboriginal organisations, are the most effective in providing Aboriginal children with a pathway away from the justice system. So we very strongly support those Aboriginal-led solutions.
So that was an interview I did the other day with Alison Gibbons, the Deputy Director of Amnesty Australia, around Amnesty's role in calling out the abuse of young people in Banksia Hill Detention Centre in WA, and particularly the call to end solitary confinement and kid prisons generally. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 AM.